This is Suzanne Madden, CEO of the Verdant Group and editor of Verdant Viewpoint magazine, speaking with Brandon Betancourt, fellow consultant in the independent practice healthcare space, who's working with us on our current issue of Verdant Viewpoint magazine. Rather than me doing the interviewing this time, Brandon is facilitating a discussion around the ins and outs of buy-ins and buyouts. So, Brandon, what do you think we need to know about this important topic?
Well, how about if we start at the top and talk about what is a buyout exactly? What does it mean when you say buyout?
Buyout
and buy-in.
Well, buy-in and buyout. So really when we sort of look at this, we're, number one, talking about partnerships specifically, physician partnerships. How do you actually bring physicians into the mix, make them a partner? What does it take to actually become a partner in a practice? And then what sort of happens at the conclusion of that time, whether somebody's retiring, maybe moving to a different practice, maybe moving to a different town. And so what we're really specifically talking about is sort of the transitioning into a partnership and transitioning out of a partnership when we refer to the term buy-in and buy-out. Now, we're also, of course, when we think about a buy-in, talking about something that's existing, right, an existing practice. Otherwise, it would simply be, you know, two or more physicians coming together to set up a new practice. When you're buying in, we're usually referring to something that's already established. There have been the founding partners that set it up, and so they're looking to actually bring in a new partner into an established practice.
Okay. So buy-in implies that there is a transaction. So are we talking about something that is always a financially driven initiative, or is there other ways to do buy-ins and buy-outs?
Well, you know, usually it is a financial transaction of some sort, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's always a cash buy, right? It doesn't mean that, hey, this is the value of the practice, and if you want to come be our partner, you got to, you know, plunk down this, you know, one big chunk of cash. It can be done in a number of ways, and most physicians are probably familiar with, you know, either the term sweat equity, where you actually sort of, you know, have to work your way in, so to speak, versus an actual sort of, you know, lump sum payment versus payments over time. So the sorts of buy-ins that we see usually consist around a sort of a process, right? The process really is sort of how do you qualify to be a partner, number one. We get to do an entire podcast on that, frankly, about how to actually sort of be on that path to partnership and how you should lay out your path to partnership so that an employed physician who really wants to become your partner, you know, understands the sort of the mechanics and the operations about how to become a partner over time. But as I said, we could do a whole separate podcast on that one. But really, the buy-in then is, you know, you want to work for a period of time for sure. You want to have that physician work for you as an employee so that you can both sort of try each other on, right? Is this going to work out long-term? Can we work together well? So let's just take the example of, say, a, you know, two-doc practice, right? Two partners, they've been expanding. They brought on an employed physician a couple of months ago. Everything's, you know, going well. And they're thinking, geez, you know, this really could work out long-term. We have somebody who's really gung-ho, very keen to become a partner over time. Let's sort of think about what that needs to look like. So usually a buy-in sort of has a couple of components to it. It's the time period, so when are you eligible to even sort of, you know, become a partner? That's usually at least a year into an employment agreement. Often it's a lot longer. I'm not suggesting, by the way, that somebody make partnership after a year. I'm just saying that you probably don't even want to start talking about partnership until after a year because you really just can't get a good sense of somebody in a fairly short period of time. You want to work together for at least a year, make sure that, you know, you're sort of compatible and that it's a good fit, you know, sort of culturally within the dynamic of your practice. If all that's been going along, you know, swimmingly, then that might be the time to have the conversation to say, look, you know, things have been going really well. You know, it's your 1 year anniversary. We will be renewing your employment agreement. And that employee may say, you know, I'd really like to be considered, you know, for partnership at some point down the line. What does that look like for you? And so often that's sort of a, you know, a time period and component that comes into it, and then you sort of figure out, okay, what does it actually mean then to achieve partnership?
So if I'm understanding, there's several layers to this. So there's one portion, which is the actual financial transaction, which I want to ask a few questions about that. Then you mentioned sweat equity. So this is the work that gets put in towards a path to partnership, whether it's a year, 2 year, 3 year, whatever that process is defined. And then there's also a layer here that isn't financially driven or even work driven, but it's also culturally driven. And by that, I mean the culture of the organization and if that candidate fits, right? So there's several elements here that it's not just simply, black or white, if you will.
Am I understanding correctly? Absolutely. And so while we could talk about sort of the transactional aspects of buy-ins, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't actually address the idea of how do you even get to that stage, right? The whole, you know, purpose of partnership is to make sure that it's something that has longevity and can work well for everybody. It's not lightly undertaken, and it usually takes a while to get there. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I've always wondered what we talk about as if something that it's just implied and it's tacit, the partnership, but what are the advantages of bringing on a partner?
Well, Brandon, I think what I'm going to do is at the end of this podcast throw that one back to you, because I know you have some very specific thoughts about whether partnership is even the right way to go, right? There's definitely pros and cons to even adding partners. So if we sort of stick with our theoretical, two partner practice that's looking at their employed physician and wanting to bring them on as a partner, and we say we're at the end of year one and everything is going swimmingly, and that physician says, hey, you know, I'm glad everything is going so well, but, you know, I'd really like to be, you know, a partner at some point. What does that look like? You know, that's when we start to get into that sort of transactional aspect of a buy-in. And that's where we sort of look at it and say, okay, There's a couple of ways that you can do this, right? First off, you want to have a good understanding of what is the value of your practice. Now, again, a whole other podcast, you know, could exist around, you know, how do you value a practice? How do you do that valuation? And for some, that might be the right way to go, to say, well, we're going to get an official practice valuation done so that everybody
knows. I know that there's a lot to talk about evaluation, but I think it's important to at least mention, you know, to define it when you talk about the value of the practice, what does that mean? Does it mean like how much is the practice produced? How much money is the partners taking home? Like, what does that mean exactly?
That's a terrific question, right? Because there are all kinds of different ways to do a practice valuation. The value of a practice to one person may be entirely different to another. So for example, you know, if you are not in a region or an area where there's really a strong market or demand to buy over a practice, then frankly, you can put any number you want down on paper. If there's no one to buy it, it has no value, right? And so when we look at what's the value of a practice in this context of sort of buy-in, what we're really looking to do is sort of say, look, what is your expected return on that investment? If you're going to actually buy into our practice, what is sort of the value of doing that, and what is it that you can expect over time? So often what we're looking at there is the delta between what is a salary for continuing to work as an employee, as an employed physician, versus what is the value to you as an actual owner, a shareholder, or a partner. And that it's that delta that really, you know, produces that return on investment. So if the partners are only making, you know, 10 grand more a year than the employed physician is, and yet carrying a lot of debt and there's some risk in there, then frankly, that's not a very valuable proposition, right? How much can you truly ask a person to buy in if all they're going to make is, you know, an additional $10,000 a year, you know, thereafter, right? So when we're looking at sort of the valuation of a practice, in this context, for an employed physician to become a partner, what we're really doing is sort of honing in on the value of what's the delta between that salary and being a partner, and what's your, you know, take-home pay with that sort of share of the profits. So that's really important.
Do the valuation change? Is it different when somebody is, like in that example that you gave about the physicians, and then they're thinking about bringing somebody in? Is that valuation different than when you're buying into a partnership versus when you are buying a practice, you know, and you're determining the value of buying the practice entirely? Do the valuations differ in the approach, or is it essentially the same concept?
It really depends on what it is that you're trying to achieve, right? And so, you know, if you were in a market where there were potential buyers, there's a whole bunch of other things that you want to layer into that. If you're selling your practice off wholesale, there's a lot of assets that, you know, need to be considered in there, right? For everything from your EMR licenses to your furniture, you know, exam room tables, equipment, all of those sorts of things, and really walking into a turnkey operation. So it's, you know, it's not terribly different, but there are a number of different factors that go into evaluation. Hey, at some point it might be fun to get Paul Vancieri on to talk about how he does these practice valuations and all of the factors that he takes into consideration, you know, on that, because really there's a number of different methodologies, right? And it depends on the method that you choose. Really depends on what is the market that you're going to be putting your practice for sale in, right? If you're trying to sell it to somebody that's already in the practice, that's going to have a different, very different price point, a very different feel, to looking, say, for venture capital to come in, or looking at a hospital. And frankly, a hospital will give you nothing for it. They'll give you a salary and a sort of a guaranteed income for X period of time, but there really is no residual value from their perspective on your practice, right? So it really varies in terms of, you know, how you're getting your practice ready for sale. But we won't digress. We'll stay with the
I was going to turn the corner back in. Yeah, we're going to turn the corner, and I apologize, but the valuation portion is very important because it determines, there's just a lot of things that it determines. So we talked a little bit about buy-ins and what that looks like. And what about a buyout, and how is that different? Is it, to me, the first thing that comes out is, that comes to me is a physician that's retiring, so he wants to be, you know, bought out. But is that the case all the time, or is it different? Let's talk a little bit about buyout. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, and just to conclude us on the buy-ins, you know, once a sort of a reasonable value has been assumed, you know, for that buy-in, then it's a matter of determining, you know, should that be a lump sum? Is that something that sort of is garnished off of the salary for that employed physician over, say, a period of 3 years, and then at the end of that 3 years they make full partner? That would sort of, you know, be the nod towards sweat equity, right? In other words, you're contributing your time at a lower value in order to reap that higher value as a full partner, you know, down the line, versus actually saying, look, you know, I'm going to pay in over the next 3 years, you know, 25%, 35% and the remainder, you know, in the final year out of my own pocket and finance that, you know, to have that buy-in. In other cases, you know, sometimes practices will say, you've worked for us already for 3 years, you know, at a flat salary with no productivity on it, do it for another 2 years and you make partner, right? So sweat equity and lump sums and installment payments are really the three sort of typical vehicles to actually getting bought in. Now, when it comes to buyouts, really, we don't run into them as often as we do buy-ins, right? Because the hope and the intention is once you buy in, you are signing on to a partnership agreement that has already contemplated what happens when you retire, right? However, occasionally we do get calls from clients that say, you know, we have a partner coming up for retirement in a couple of years, and he or she is sort of thinking that, you know, when they retire, we really should be paying them something. There should be some value, extra value that they're getting back out of the partnership, and we really didn't contemplate anything in our partnership agreement. What do we do now, right? And so buyouts come up, you know, in that form. Often, the value of being a partner is received during the time that you are a partner, right? And when you're retiring, you've made your money out of that practice. You've made that profit. You've pulled that profit out of the practice year over year. And so really, you know, why should your partners pay you anything more, you know, with you exiting? You're exiting. You're not going to be contributing value, and you're not adding any more revenues to the pot. So, you know, why would they do that? In other cases, you know, you have partners that say, look, I really helped to build this practice. It's a very profitable operation. You know, what I have contributed is more than sort of what I've gotten out in terms of money, because we've often put a lot of capital back into the practice to expand it. And therefore, you know, I've built something that's worth a whole hell of a lot that I didn't actually gain the benefit of, you know, to my pocketbook in terms of pulling that as revenue. And therefore, you know, I do expect, you know, a portion of the practice value to come back to me when I retire. And that's usually the sort of the typical scenario that we run, that we see, you know, is when a practice has gotten quite large. And frankly, it's only gotten large because that capital has been plowed back into the practice to build it. So in those cases, it's the same sort of, you know, methodology. We look at, well, what is the value of the practice, right? And what is it that is sort of worth paying? If you set up a structure whereby everybody gets a golden parachute when they're exiting, and you have three or four doctors that are all retiring in a fairly short period of time, frankly, you can destroy that practice. You can sink the ship, right? Because now you have to pull too much cash out of it, and it's just not going to be, you know, profitable. So we look at, you know, these buyouts in a way that, you know, that it has to be fair, you know, to the exiting partner. It has to be fair to those that are the ones paying the bill for that exiting partner. But it also is setting precedent for everybody else to follow, right? That, you know, you can't just say, well, for this guy, you know, because he was the original founding, you know, partner, we're going to do this mammoth thing for him, but, you know, we're not going to do anything like that for any of the rest of us. You know, I have seen one or two iterations of that, by the way. But overall, you want to set up something that's actually going to be able to be sustained by the practice, that is fair, and that everybody can live with, right? And that is sort of the crux of partnership. Can you agree? Can you all sort of come to the table and agree on, you know, making these sorts of business decisions that creates fairness for all? So buyout, you know, can be a tricky thing to navigate.
I think I really like that point that the value is made during the time that you were partner at the practice, and there's not necessarily anything more or left for the practice to provide you once you leave the practice. So, but it seems, you know, like as you mentioned, some doctors, especially the founding doctors, say, well, it took me a long time to build this, and therefore, so when I leave, there should be a cash out. But it seems like that the buyout then, that's when would be more relevant if you're selling the practice to someone, whether it is a young physician or younger physician or somebody else, and that's what where the buyout would really be more pertinent. Am I reading that right, or is that
absolutely quite? No, absolutely. And sometimes
so the buy-in is more buying into a partnership, where a buyout is really more selling out entirely.
That's right. And where it gets okay. really fudgy, Brandon, is, you know, sometimes we see practices where you have individuals practicing their individual practices under the umbrella of a group, right? In other words, they have a sort of an eat what you kill model, meaning whatever revenues they generate are what they're taking out minus the expenses to contribute to the pool of the group. And so we've had some really, you know, interesting experiences with clients where, you know, a group has called us and said, hey, you know what, we have a partner that's actually trying to sell their part of the partnership to somebody we don't even know to come into the practice and take over their practice under our roof and work with us. And this isn't even somebody we know, but they've managed to get a good price for this, and so they're sort of, you know, selling to this other, you know, physician. And so, you know, I always caution and say, are you truly a partnership in terms of how you're making business decisions? Or if you are that sort of, you know, just an umbrella group with a lot of individuals, you know, under that roof, well, you really want to make sure that you've got some pretty tight practice agreements in place to contemplate this so you don't end up in a situation like that, which really was quite how we resolved for that, by the way, was the practice bought out that partner at that price point or close to that price point, rather than have some, you know, strange doctor just walk in and start, you know, working with them and buying over that piece of the practice.
It's interesting because there's a partnership agreement and everybody's collaborating, but then there's also a sort of by having an ownership of the practice, then it's almost like if you're having an ownership of an organization where there's, you know, where you own a portion of the organization, and then you can have somebody buy that portion, and then you know, you can sell it, like, I don't know, stocks or whatever the case might be. But in this case, you know, the partnership is not necessarily, it is ownership, but it's a different type of ownership, not in the sense where you can go and sell your portion. And I think a lot of it has to do is because the one that's producing the income is that partner, whereas in another organization, you know, you have sales and you've got production and you've got equipment, and so that company continues to produce whether or not the owner or the partner is there. And I think that's an important distinction with practices, is that the production mechanism, the way that the income is generated, is by the actual labor of the physician.
Right.
So I think that's important. So it's interesting that other, in that case, that partner was trying to sell his portion, and I'm thinking, but if he's gone, then who's the one that's going to be producing for his, you know, for him to get his cut? So that's kind of interesting and funny at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it, you know, really brings to mind, you know, partnership can be fraught with all kinds of shenanigans. You know, which I would just love to hear your thoughts, you know, to sort of, you know, conclude and wrap up our buy-ins and buyouts. Like, should you even take on partners? You know, is partnership overrated? Is it, you know, something that, you know, if you have an opportunity to not do it, should you just not bother? What do you think, Brandon?
But before I jump into that, though, there's a lot of moving parts. And where does something like this live? Like, you know, the rules and what happens if this, and what happens if that, and, you know, if a partnership, if a partner. Okay,
yep.
An agreement.
Always put it in the agreement.
And when's the best time to do this? Like, I mean, should you wait until the partner's ready to retire to come up with an agreement, or when should you do this work?
So if you are in a partnership and you don't actually have an official partnership agreement, the time to do it is now. You don't wait until an issue comes up that you have to sort of work through, because then, frankly, there's going to be some duress, right? You're under some stress. You're under some duress. There's something that, you know, potentially needs to be done, you know, sooner rather than later, et cetera, and it's just really not the most effective way to make decisions. So if you don't have a formalized partnership agreement that contemplates not just sort of buy-ins and buy-outs, you know, buy-ins for future partners and buy-outs for existing, but even just, you know, take a look at your partnership agreement now, right? There's no time like the present to say, are we actually covering all of our bases here? What happens if somebody wants to semi-retire and cut back? That comes up so frequently, right? Because, you know, that's a big one. You're not really ready to retire just yet, but you don't want to continue to work, you know, full time. And so, you know, what happens then, particularly if everything is split equally, then it's, you know, it's equal pay for equal work. Well, if you change the equality in who's working and how much they're working, then what do you do, right? So there's no time like the present. If you have no agreement, do it now. Start working on it now. If you do have an agreement, but it's really old and you've no idea what's in it, or and it hasn't been looked at for years, now's the time to dust it off, take a look, and sort of see what all is in there. And if you do have a good agreement, and an agreement, you know, was put in place, or you signed an agreement when you came on board as partner, again, no harm just sort of putting eyes on, taking a look at that, and saying, okay, is it contemplated in there? If we were to add partners, what does that do for us, and if, you know, one of us is leaving, do we have that sort of, you know, buttoned up?
Excellent. All right. So my thoughts on the partnership is I've always wondered if partnerships are overrated. And I believe that in many cases they can be overrated. And there's always this pursuit of, especially with the young physicians, of, you know, how soon can I become to be a partner? And you alluded to the fact about the culture of the organization. And so my question to many times that I've interviewed young physicians seeking for partnership opportunities, in my mind, I want to say, is that one of the first, it's like asking, if you're going out on a date for the very first time, and then asking, like, hey, how soon can we get married? It's like, you don't even know me. You don't know if you like the culture. You don't know if you like working here. So these sort of questions, although important, you would like to have an idea. I think that there is a lot of stuff that both sides need to consider before even the partnership discussions should even happen. So that's why I think that partnerships are overrated. I also one aspect of why I think that partnerships are overrated, because oftentimes people don't think about all the work that goes into becoming a partner, and what are some of the responsibilities that you have once you become a partner. So in many cases, you know, you mentioned an example where the partners only make maybe just a little bit more than an employed physician. So the value of becoming a partner isn't necessarily going to exponentially increase just because you are a partner. Right. So oftentimes with a good salary and a good either a revenue sharing program or a profit sharing program or some sort of an incentive program, you could probably do just as good financially as a partner would without having all the headaches of now owning a business, which there's all kinds of different repercussions of owning a business. You know, there's lines of credit, there's your name gets put on more documents, you know, the lease and long-term commitments, and not to mention, for example, you get paid last. Once you become a partner, you have to pay all the expenses, all the employees first, and then sometimes there isn't enough to go around. So there's a few years that maybe the partners have to scale back as far as how much the money they bring in to ensure that the practice, you know, continues operating financially properly. So I actually wrote an article about this in this issue that goes into further detail about some of the things that that you should consider and why the partnerships are often overrated. But so you know, I encourage people to take a look at that if they want to learn more about it.
Exactly. Yep. So Verdon Viewpoint Spring Equinox 2019 issue will have your thoughts collected on a page in that very regard. Great, Brandon. Thanks so much for talking about this topic today. I think we laid out a lot of information here, and hopefully we'll be able to do a couple of follow-ups and issues to come. But it's been just a pleasure chatting with you and talking through this.
Likewise.
Fun times. Thanks, Brandon.
It's been fun. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.